Today is Wednesday, March the 5th, 2025. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Many of us are reminded of the importance of warmth and comfort. Unfortunately, not everyone has access to proper winter clothing. Donating winter coats helps those in need stay warm during the colder months. By donating your gently used or new winter coats, you contribute to the community support initiatives that aim to keep vulnerable populations safe and warm during the harsh winter conditions. Contact local charities and organizations that accept clothing donations. You can use search engines by typing in the keywords such as winter coat donation near me, or you can type in coat drive near me for more targeted results. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. If you're a Chrome user, you're being tracked. We hope it would be less invasive by now with the death of tracking cookies, but it isn't. In fact, it's worse with a surprise revival of digital fingerprinting, a practice even Google has described as wrong. But there's finally some light at the end of this long, dark tracking tunnel. That's the good news. The bad news is you need to change how you use your browser. Google is updating how your IP address is tracked as you use Chrome, which means harvesting your location and activity across the web. The company has shared plans for IP protection, a feature that limits availability of users' original IP address in the third-party context. That means your IP address is hidden from data trackers, including some belonging to Google's itself. The catch is that the scope of this proposal is limited to Chrome's incognito mode, which means only private browsing benefits. If this sounds like Apple's Private Relay, that's because it is. Private Relay masks your IP address, hiding the combination of your own IP and your destination IP, which is the sites you browse from anyone, including Apple, just as with Private Relay. Google will provide an anonymized coarse locational IP to ensure localized browsing still works. Apple's Private Relay is designed to protect your privacy by ensuring that when you browse the web in Safari, no single party, not even Apple, can see both who you and what sites you're visiting when Private Relay is enabled. Your requests are sent through 2 different secure internet relays. Now, as Google explains, IP addresses are essential to the basic functioning of the web, notably for routing traffic and to prevent fraud and spam. However, like third-party cookies, they can also be used for tracking. For Chrome users who choose to browse in incognito mode, we wanted to provide additional control over their IP address without breaking essential web functionality. Once operational, Google will see your IP address but will engage a third party to control the other proxy that accesses destination IPs. Even Google won't see both IP addresses, the company says, just like Apple. With Apple's Private Relay, your IP address is visible to your network provider and the first relay, which is operated by Apple. Your DNS records are encrypted so neither party can see the address of the website you're trying to visit. The second relay, which is operated by a third-party content provider, generates a temporary IP address, decrypts the name of the website you requested, and connects you to the site. The catch, again, is that this will only work for private browsing sessions in Chrome. If you're browsing normally, then the new protections don't apply. That's different to Private Relay, which protects all your Safari traffic one step at a time. This protection from IP tracking is still in development, but will come much faster than Google's other new privacy innovation, a one-click global prompt to disable tracking cookies in Chrome. That will be almost certainly be caught up in regulatory and industry discussions and could take some time to reach your browser. Meantime, IP protection will be another reason to browse privately in Chrome. Microsoft Skype service will no longer be available after May the 5th of this year. Users are encouraged to switch to using Teams for calls and chats. Microsoft has been transitioning away from Skype towards Teams pretty much since Teams was introduced. The writing has been on the wall for Skype for a long time, but every time you think it's dead, Microsoft launches some big update. This time, however, that's not happening, as Microsoft is finally retiring Skype in May. The solution? You guessed it, use Teams instead. There's a message inside of the latest Skype for Windows preview that says, starting in May, Skype will no longer be available. Continue your calls and chats in Teams. That's followed by a note that a certain number of your friends have already moved to Teams free, presumably based on your contacts. Skype was first launched back in 2003, and Microsoft acquired it in 2011. A couple of years after that, it discontinued with some of its in-house communication products like Windows Live Messenger, and then in 2015, Microsoft tried to integrate Skype into Windows 10. The Windows 10 integration lasted about 9 months. The company had added separate apps for video calling, messaging, and phone calls, and removed them in the very next update. When that update shipped in 2016, it introduced a universal Windows platform with the acronym UWP, and that app, as it continues to shift away from Win32, only to kill off the UWP and return to Win32. In 2017, Microsoft launched Teams, a collaboration platform designed to compete with other tools like Slack. Teams was built on the foundation of Skype, aiming to enhance workplace communication through features such as chat, video conferencing, and file sharing. Skype for Business was officially retired in 2021, marking a significant shift in Microsoft's strategy towards collaboration tools. The company recognized that Skype did not achieve the level of success it had hoped for, especially in light of competition from services like Apple's FaceTime and Google's various communication offerings. When Windows 11 was released in 2021, it included integration with Teams instead of Skype, signaling a clear pivot towards Teams as the primary communication tool for users. This change was further emphasized by the introduction of a free, personal version of Teams, which replaced Skype in many contexts. As of March 2025, Microsoft is set to officially retire Skype with a service no longer available after May 5, 2025. Users are encouraged to transition to Teams for their communication needs. Microsoft's aggressive push for Teams reflects its commitment to modern collaboration tools, moving away from Skype to better meet the demands of users in a competitive landscape. In 2017, Microsoft launched Teams, a collaboration platform built on the backbone of Skype, designed to compete with the likes of Slack. It's been pushing Teams pretty hard. 6 years ago, Skype for Business was retired. Skype wasn't quite the hit that Microsoft wanted it to be with the success of Apple's FaceTime, the failure of the company's own mobile platform, and Google's launching its endless array of communication services. When Windows 11 first launched in 2011, it shipped with Teams integration, similar to how Windows 10 version 15.11 shipped with Skype integration. While that eventually went away as well, the fact that there was a free personal version of Teams being shipped instead of Skype was a clear sign. Amazon Alexa Plus, a more personalized voice assistant. At a media event in Manhattan, Amazon CEO Andy Jassy and other executives of the company unveiled a long-awaited revamp of Alexa, meant to be a chattier, more helpful, and more personalized version of the voice assistant. They demonstrated how to use Alexa Plus, as the updated version is dubbed to order groceries from Amazon Fresh, book a lunch reservation through OpenTable, and control smart home features. If those functions sound familiar, it's because Alexa has been doing each of those things for many years. The difference is that the new version will be able to do so in a more seamless and conversational way that's familiar to users of large language model chatbots like OpenAI's ChatGPT, potentially increasing the likelihood that people will actually use those features. Amazon unveiled some impressive new Alexa Plus functions too, such as sending reminder texts on a user's behalf and quizzing a student for a school assignment. Initial reaction from the news media was positive. Alexa Plus is likely to show up rivals voice assistants such as Apple Siri. That's important, but the question Alexa really has to answer is how it can make money for Amazon. The new version will be free for Prime members, while others can pay $20 a month for Alexa Plus, as that's more than the $15 per month Amazon charges for Prime. It's unclear why anyone would make that choice. We already know Amazon doesn't make money from the Alexa devices themselves, which it sells at a roughly break-even price. Amazon's hope seems to be that by adding to the Prime subscription appeal and by making buying things more convenient, Alexa Plus should help it sell more stuff. It's a plausible strategy, assuming customers love the new Alexa. It's also similar to Meta's platform's bet that AI will help it sell more ads in the near term. But for Amazon, for years has argued that Alexa drives more sales and support other businesses like Prime, so the fundamental idea is not new. Will it work this time around? Well, if the new version is free for Prime members, while others can pay $20 a month for Alexa Plus, and that's more than the $15 per month that Amazon charges for Prime, you got to do your math. USPS announces changes to first-class mail. The United States Postal Service, that's the USPS, has announced it is adopting new service standards that are projected to save the government agency at least $36 billion over the next 10 years. USPS has lost more than $100 billion since 2007, including $9.5 billion in the 12 months ending September 30, 2024. The outgoing Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, warned in November that the agency had to continue cutting costs or it will face a government bailout or the end of this great organization as we know it. Starting April 1st, service standard adjustments will be made for first-class mail, periodicals, marketing mail, and package services, according to the USPS. USPS will deliver 75% of first-class mail at the same standard, 14% will be upgraded to a faster standard, while 11% will have a slower standard. In other words, first-class mail will have three different standards. All first-class mail will still be delivered within the current 1 to 5 business day range. The amendments are projected to save $36 billion over the next 10 years from transportation, mail processing, and real estate cost reductions. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy said in a statement last week that by implementing the new standards and the operational initiatives to which they are aligned, we will be better able to achieve the goals of our modernization plans and create a high-performing, financially sustainable organization, which is necessary to achieve the statutory policies and objectives established for the Postal Service by law. So what's next? The cost-saving measures come at a time when the administration is considering merging the USPS into the Commerce Department and bringing it under the authority of the executive branch. We want to have a post office that works well and doesn't lose massive amounts of money, and we're thinking about doing that. Microsoft reportedly is canceling data center leases. OpenAI could be reason Microsoft is recalibrating plans, analysts say. Is Microsoft starting to have doubts about artificial intelligence demand? A research note written by TD Cowen analyst says Microsoft has canceled leases in the United States with at least two private data center operators, totaling a couple hundred megawatts, and also not converting so-called statements of qualifications into leases. The analysts also say Microsoft has reallocated a considerable portion of its international spending to the United States. Rising capital expenses and newcomers like Palantir and DeepSeek are challenging the dominance of the Magnificent Seven stocks like Tesla and NVIDIA. Wedbush's Dan Ives and MarketWatch James Rogers discuss what investors should watch next. When coupled with our prior channel checks, it points to a potential oversupply position for Microsoft, says the analyst led by Michael Elias. The analysts who cover companies, including American Tower, say the Microsoft shift could be tied to OpenAI, the ChatGPT maker that partly held by a software giant. Consider this. Microsoft was the most active lessee of capacity in 2023 and the first half of 2024, at which time it was procuring capacity relative to a capacity forecast that contemplated incremental OpenAI workloads. However, as we believe is indicated by its decision to pause construction on a data center in Wisconsin, which our prior channel checks indicated was to support OpenAI, there is capacity that has likely procured, particularly in areas where capacity is not fungible to cloud, where the company may have excess data center capacity relative to its new forecast, they say. Microsoft, for its part, reiterated its plan to spend $80 billion on infrastructure and told Bloomberg in a statement that it may strategically pace or adjust our infrastructure in some areas. Satya Nadella, the Microsoft chairman and chief executive, talked last week about how there has to be indications that AI demand will meet supply, which he says will be demonstrated if global economic growth accelerates. An MIT professor is saying that companies are wasting millions on AI spending. What he's saying is don't believe the hype. MIT Institute professor Darren Acemoglu made the statement that AI is overhyped. KPMG survey says 81% of U.S. executives worry about lagging behind on tech, but MIT economist says AI will only replace 5% of jobs. MIT professor Darren Acemoglu believes that companies are wasting vast amounts of money investing in AI when its net effect is going to be marginal. CEOs have jumped on artificial intelligence as the ultimate worker who doesn't need to be paid or sleep or take lunch breaks, with many predicting AI will replace the majority of white-collar jobs. In fact, says the professor, AI will displace or heavily assist just 5% of the workforce, far too few in numbers to justify the billions being invested in the technology. A lot of money is going to get wasted, says the MIT professor. This suggests that the estimated economic benefits of massive efficiencies and productivity gains from AI are not going to be realized for a very long time. A lot of money is going to get wasted. He told Bloomberg News, you're not going to get an economic revolution out of that 5%. AI hype has driven a stock market boom in America, with NVIDIA CEO, who obviously has skin in the game as his company makes the chips that AI relies on, predicting that as much as $1 trillion will have to be spent upgrading data centers to keep on top of demand. By contrast, Professor Acemoglu told Bloomberg that three scenarios could now play out. The AI hype slowly cools as companies make modest investments in the technology. The other is AI frenzy builds for another year or so, leading to a tech stock crash, which leaves the C-suite and investors disillusioned with the technology. AI spring followed by AI winter, he called it. And the third is that the mania continues to build for years, leading companies to make huge redundancies and pump hundreds of billions into AI without really understanding what they're going to do with it, only to be left scrambling to try and rehire workers when they realize the emperor has no clothes. The professor believes that the most likely outcome is a combination of the second and third scenarios. Executives are too afraid of missing out on the AI boom for him on the hype cycle to peak yet, and when the hype gets intensified, the floor is unlikely to be soft. The MIT professor's prognosis is backed up by a KPMG International report published just recently, which found that 81% of U.S. executives said it's difficult to keep up with the rapid pace of technological change, and they worry about lagging behind other companies. While the MIT economist is impressed by what large language models like ChatGPT can do, reliability issues means they won't replace humans in the workplace for a very long time. You need highly reliable information or the ability of these models to faithfully implement certain steps that previously workers were doing, he said. He added that you can do that in a few places with some human supervised oversight, like coding, but in most places they cannot. That's a reality check for where we are right now. What he's saying is that these large language models, they'll never be perfect. And if they're never going to be perfect, you're going to have an efficiency problem with AI being implemented in the business environment. Artificial intelligence is yet to find a killer app. While the likes of OpenAI and Alibaba are talking up artificial general intelligence capable of replacing humans, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella argues AI success should be measured by its benefit to the global economy, which may come once the technology finds a killer app to match the impact of apps like email or Excel. Nadella thinks a better benchmark for AI success should be its ability to boost a country's gross domestic product. When we say, oh, this is like the Industrial Revolution, let's have that Industrial Revolution type of growth. That means to me 10%, 7% for the developed world. Inflation adjusted, growing at 5%. That's the real marker. Few nations achieve that pace of growth in 2024. Nadella suggested that growth hasn't eventuated because it's going to take time before folks understand how to use AI effectively. Assuming they find a use for it, just as it took some years for the personal computer to find its feet. Just imagine how a multinational corporation like us did forecasts pre-PC and email and spreadsheets. Faxes went around, somebody then got those faxes and then did an inter-office memo that then went around, and people entered numbers, and then ultimately a forecast came out, maybe just in time for the next quarter, Nadella explained. Then somebody said, hey, I'm just going to take an Excel spreadsheet, put it in an email, send it around, people will go edit it, and I'll have the forecast. The entire forecasting business process changed because the work artifact and the workflow changed. That is what needs to happen when AI being introduced into knowledge work, the COO said. Even after AI finds its place at work, Nadella doesn't think it will outright replace knowledge workers. Don't conflate knowledge workers with knowledge work. The knowledge work of today could probably be automated. Instead, he argues AI agents will allow workers to focus on higher value tasks. Whether this is actually how it'll play out, or whether enterprises will take this as an opportunity to reduce costs by cutting staff, remains to be seen. Even if AGI or so-called AI superintelligence, that's theoretical machines with cognitive capabilities that exceed human brain power, turned out to be more than hype. Nadella still doesn't expect them to replace humans anytime soon due to legal issues. Today, you cannot deploy these intelligence unless until there's someone indemnifying it as a human, he said. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and sometimes a bit of the just general evolution of getting a job. And this is a world where we get a lot of tech involved with this, because we're going on to the various job boards. We're going on to LinkedIn. We're going on to Indeed.com and everything else that comes along with that. And one of the situations that I saw a number of years ago, the last time I was really actively looking for a job, I noticed that ghost jobs would show up. And what is a ghost job? That is a job listing that is never going to be filled. It is posted and then reposted, and applicants continue to apply in hopes of landing their next position. And then they move forward and they're later notified the company's decided to go in a different direction, and then that same position will pop up again a few weeks later. And this is a very problematic situation for the integrity of the whole idea of looking online for a job, where it gets posted and you may even apply and you may even go through an interview, and then you think you're doing great and it disappears. And then that job is posted again and again and again. Anything like this is not going to be legitimate. I want you to be aware that ghost jobs are out there, and they're increasing, and they are far more common than you might think. According to some studies that I came across, over half of the job postings online are ghost jobs. They have companies posting positions for weeks and months on end without any intention of hiring. Do I want to discourage you? No, I don't want you to feel beleaguered and overwhelmed by all of this. However, this is really affecting the whole concept of utilizing LinkedIn or Indeed or even a particular company, because it is disrespectful for those out there that are actively seeking employment. This is wasting time. It is creating an illusion of expanding headcount. It contributes to this overwhelming just malaise on the part of job hunters that are going into what feels like a very negative job market, a very misleading job market. We're already dealing with a lot of these different scam postings and a lot of these different situations where companies will have you go through 10 different interviews to get the position. Now, occasionally, yes, I do understand some companies look for going through and putting you through the paces of many interviews and you talking to a lot of different people, but we need to move away from that. We are capable as a society of sizing up the most likely person for the position within a matter of a couple of weeks, not a couple of months. One of the positions I worked for a number of years ago was very close to this. They had me work for them as a contractor for 3 months and then axed the entire team. And when I say the entire team, we're talking about 15 people. We're just summarily just sent packing. And then they hired the entire team again. And then axed all of them, because 3 months later, they rehired the entire team again. And then another 3 months later, the entire team again, and so forth and so on. And they were pretending that they were getting a job done. They were pretending that they were going to find the right match of everybody they needed to do exactly what they wanted and in a way that they wanted. And they were stretching. They were stretching really far. I was amazed when I first experienced that and encountered that, especially since it is a major name. If I told you the name, you'd be aghast at it. Look, I'm going to tell you, if you are hiring someone, you need to be upfront with them. You need to tell them why you're skipping over their resume. You need to give them some communication. If you don't have a position open, don't put out like dream items. Oh, we want this person and they've got to have 28 different certifications. You're not going to find somebody with the exact 28 certifications. Don't be playing around with posting things when you already plan on hiring the person that's internal. Don't go on out there and post a job and keep going through employees every 3 months. This is a world that everybody is going to start to fight back against, and that will leave you as an employer in the hot seat trying to find employees that are good or even perfect. And you're not going to find them because word will get around, especially in certain specialties where the people talk to each other. They're very well aware that, yes, I have a certain set of skills honed over a course of many years in my career, and I do a certain specific set of these, and I'm good at that. And if you keep skipping over it, yeah, you're going to find that word is going to get around and it's not going to be easy for you to even find a halfway decent employee. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Heat-assisted magnetic recording, hard disk drives. Heat-assisted magnetic recording with the acronym HAMR is a new processing method of increasing capacity on hard disk drives. Seagate is charging ahead in its quest to produce supersized hard disk drives, and towards the end of January 2025, the world's largest hard drive vendor introduced a 36 terabyte model, arriving just a month after it debuted a 32 terabyte one, and it revealed at the time that a 60 terabyte drive is on its way. Now the firm has announced plans to acquire Intevac, a company known for making sputtering systems that apply ultra-thin layers of material, such as an iron platinum alloy, to hard disk drive platters. This advanced deposition process allows for the creation of magnetic layers with higher uniformity, improved signal-to-noise ratios, and fewer defects, potentially resulting in denser data storage. Over 65% of the world's hard disk drive output is produced using Intevac systems, which works out to more than 50 million disks per month. The technology is considered essential for perpendicular magnetic recording and heat-assisted magnetic recording. HAMR, which is heat-assisted magnetic recording, lowers magnetic resistance by heating the drive, allows the data to be written in smaller, more stable bits, and will likely to be a key factor in hard disk drives reaching 100 terabyte capacities. By buying Intevac, Seagate has potentially scored a big win over its rivals. Seagate is Intevac's primary customer, but Western Digital is one too, and it, along with Toshiba, has HAMR drives in the works. The definitive agreement with Seagate acquire Intevac in an all-cash transaction. The acquisition is expected to close in late March or early this year in April, but Western Digital or Toshiba or both could object to the deal on reduced competition grounds, which could delay its completion or even prevent the transaction from taking place. Microsoft Edge just got a smart feature. the ability to control how much RAM the web browser gobbles up. Windows Latest, which is a publication, reports that resource controls are now live in the finished stable version of Edge after having been in testing since around the middle of 2024. These are controls to limit how much RAM that Edge uses, certainly not the only hardware resource in a computer, but a major part of the picture, particularly for a web browser when running a whole lot of tabs. The resource controls panel offers a slider that can be adjusted to make all the system RAM on your PC available to Edge, or as little as 1 GB. You can also choose whether that limit applies all the time or only when you're playing a PC game. The latter option allows those keen on gaming to have Edge operating normally, will have a full amount of RAM when doing other tasks, but whenever a PC game is running, the browser's allocation of system memory can be trimmed down considerably to help ensure games run a bit more smoothly. The new resource controls are a smart move to give Edge something extra over its big rival Chrome. Google's browser does have performance alerts, along with a memory saver feature, which makes tabs that haven't been used for a while inactive to save RAM. But this does not provide anything like the same level of control as this fresh introduction for Edge. AI investments and the greed cycle. The statement that most AI investments will lose money as the market enters a greed cycle reflects concerns about the current state of AI-related investments. This sentiment aligns with broader observations about market behavior during periods of heightened enthusiasm and speculative investment. The greed cycle in investments refers to a phase in financial markets where excessive optimism and speculative behavior drive investments, often leading to overvaluation and eventual losses. This cycle is fueled by base instincts like greed and fear, which can detrimentally influence investment decisions. Historically, such cycles have led to market corrections as overhyped and investments fail to deliver expected returns. What are the AI investment challenges? Economic payoff, not immediate. Despite the surge in AI investments, the economic payoff is not yet evident. For instance, Vanguard notes that AI investments are unlikely to offset near-term economic slowdowns or justify high stock valuations. There's the issue of sustainability concerns. Reports suggest that even major players like OpenAI may face significant financial challenges with potential losses of $5 billion this year. This raises concerns about the viability of smaller AI companies struggling to compete with big tech. And there's investor behavior. The influx of capital into generative AI, estimated at $1 trillion, has sparked debates about whether these investments will ultimately pay off. Some experts argue that the current enthusiasm may not translate into sustainable returns. While AI holds transformative potential, the current investment landscape is marked by speculative behavior characteristics of a greed cycle. This could result in significant loss for many investors, particularly those who fail to account for the long-term challenges and economic realities of AI development. Microsoft's Satya Nadella's AI Reality Check. Microsoft plans to lease AI computing capacity down the road because the company expects there to be an oversupply driven by massive investments. This would lower the price of AI computing capacity and put pressure on demand for NVIDIA's GPUs, while cheap AI computing could boost demand. History suggests there's a limit. Tech giants are going all in on artificial intelligence. Microsoft recently announced plans to spend $80 billion this year building out AI data centers to support training advanced AI models and deploying those models to the cloud. Meta Platforms is following suit, with up to $65 billion allocated for AI infrastructure in 2025. Not to be outdone, Amazon has upped its capital spending plan to $100 billion for the year, although not all of this will go towards AI computing capacity. Lastly, Alphabet, or Google, boosted its capital spending plan to $75 billion for 2025, with much of that related to AI. On top of all this spending, the Trump administration's Stargate project involves another $500 billion in AI investments over the next 4 years, and the European Union is aiming to mobilize $209 billion for AI investment. Long story short, an enormous amount of capital is rapidly being spent on AI data centers and the necessary equipment to train and run powerful AI models, particularly graphics processing units, GPUs. Demand for NVIDIA's data center GPUs will likely remain strong for the time being as companies and governments go wild on AI spending. What happens after that? Well, it depends on whether demand for AI computing capacity rises to meet an exploding amount of supply. In a recent interview, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said something curious that should give NVIDIA investors pause. While Microsoft is investing heavily in AI computing capacity, Nadella essentially predicted an oversupply sometime in the next few years. The company plans to lease a lot of capacity in 2027 and 2028 rather than build out additional capacity of its own. And here's the kicker. Because I look at the builds and I'm saying, this is fantastic. The only thing that's going to happen with all the compute build is the prices are going to come down. One way a bubble can form is through overinvestment. Companies and governments are building out massive quantities of AI computing capacity independently without any real idea of what demand will look like a few years from now. It won't take much of a miscalculation for supply to greatly exceed demand once this current build-out is complete. The closest historical parallel to this AI spending bonanza is not the dot-com bubble, but the railroad bubble of the late 1800s. Far too much capital was spent building out railroad capacity, leading to an enormous oversupply that sent railroads into bankruptcy and helped trigger a financial panic. The railroad, like AI, was a revolutionary technology that fundamentally changed the world. But that fact didn't save investors. In an oversupply scenario, prices for AI computing will plunge. That's great for anyone renting AI computing capacity and terrible for anyone owning it. In theory, cheaper access to AI computing could drive up demand. However, there's a limit to this effect. An oversupply of railroads didn't lead to people taking more trips or shipping more freight to fully match that supply. Trees don't grow to the sky after all. For NVIDIA, AI's oversupply is a double whammy. Not only would the pricing of its powerful data center GPUs come under pressure, but demand would also fall off a cliff. If there's too much AI computing capacity, demand will come mostly from maintaining existing infrastructure rather than expansion. There's also the complication that a growing number of tech giants are designing their own AI chips. OpenAI is the latest to reportedly jump on the bandwagon as it aims to lower its dependence on NVIDIA. The trillion-dollar question is whether demand for AI computing capacity can possibly rise enough to absorb the enormous supply coming online over the next few years. The fate of NVIDIA stock hangs in the balance. Microsoft is taking a smart approach to AI investment. The company is still building out plenty of capacity, but it's taking care not to overdo it. By planning to lease a lot of capacity down the road, Microsoft is taking quite a bit of the risk off the table. If Nadella is right about AI oversupply, it's hard to see how NVIDIA's revenue and profit can grow at a quick enough pace to justify a multi-trillion dollar valuation. The short term may look bright for the GPU leader as AI investments explode, but the longer term picture isn't as clear. If we truly are witnessing a massive AI overinvestment cycle, NVIDIA stock will come under some serious pressure sooner or later. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, you and I have talked about power power packs, wide variety of them over the years.
Higher power lately with lithium iron phosphate out there, and mm-hmm. it's taken me through some power outages. One of the lead brands that this is the first time I've had a chance to review, and if they weren't a lead brand, you might think I was talking about an Italian police officer because its name is Blue Eddy.
Yeah. Sí, señor. No, that's more. Wait, was that?
Grazie.
Yeah, there you go.
As I say, Blue Eddy is one of the leading brands among the big power banks, and it, like the others, it charges from AC, it charges from solar, it charges from vehicle power.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Just a lot of sources, and probably get a bicycle with a generator if you wanted to. This model is their AC180.
Okay.
Which you can often find it for less than $500. I mentioned $500. Mm-hmm. Because for a lot of us, that's the deductible that we pay if a long outage means all the meat and fish and food in our fridge goes bad.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. But this Blue Eddy AC180 can keep a fridge going for days, days.
Yeah, yeah.
If you remember to keep the fridge door closed, because remember, a fridge it needs something like 300 watts or whatever, but that's peak. When the compressor's running, which isn't all the time. So keep the door closed. It can go a long time. The AC-180's overall rating is 1,152 watt-hours.
Okay. All right.
That's more protection than you thought. And they offer it, if you need more, an add-on battery, another 880. The B80 battery box gives you, let's just say it boosts the overall deliverable. I can't tell you you're going to be pulling it at a given rate. So it's more of the same.
Sure. Okay.
Here's some other things to love about it. 0 to 80% recharge in 45 minutes.
Wait, what? Okay.
That's with a full power wall plug. But if you got like solar power in always cloudy Cleveland, that won't work as quickly. But.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an amazing recharge time, though. I mean, it's got to be pulling a lot of power through that wall outlet. But
you're borrowing it, you'll get it back.
Sure. Yes. Yes, indeed.
It has a UPS mode, so it auto switches to providing the power. If you keep it plugged in and you plug something in it that you want to keep running no matter what, the transfer from passing through the power from the wall to powering itself using its own alternator, if you would, its own inversion circuit. It's all automatic. So if you've got something like, say, a sump pump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And in an outage, you'd rather not have that stuff flood the basement floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This keeps that going. In fact, it's powerful enough to probably handle a pair of them.
Okay. All right.
Now,
how fast is that switchover time? Is it suitable for computers or?
Yes, I believe it's 17 milliseconds. So
okay, all right.
One cycle at 60 hertz.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Let's see. It has 4 AC power outlets. It's got several USB power ports. It has a 15-watt wireless charging pad.
Okay, so it's like a Qi charger, right?
Yeah. It's roughly 36 pounds, so it's lighter than a lot of these other lithium iron phosphate battery boxes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And one thing that I love as a not young man, it has handles up top along both sides. It's a lot easier to move around.
So on both sides. So this is something you could carry by yourself.
Two-handed.
But if you were elderly, you could have two people carry it.
One younger. Yeah.
Yeah. One person on each side. Yeah. Two kids. There you go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I like that.
You can find this at Walmart and Home Depot or BlueEddy.com online. Check the prices. Sales are frequent.
Okay.
As a you know,
and you
it's
mentioned
less than $500. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned when we opened up, you were mentioning something in regards to the pricing is kind of all over the place, depending on where you're buying from.
It can be because sales tend to be selective, one outlet at a time.
Okay. All right.
And also there is a time when the next similar model comes out that this one may drop a little bit.
Sure. You know.
It's always something.
Are you seeing a trend towards that where the sales are spotting up in random spots versus, you know, sometimes products it's on sale everywhere at the same time and then back up to full price at the same time?
I will tell you that both are frequent occurrences.
Okay.
And the change away from sales,
yeah,
is being prompted by the new round of tariffs.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. So there's a lot to probably unpack on other shows, but there we go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. TCF 2025 is Saturday, March the 29th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The theme for this year is Fun with Technology. The keynote speaker is Dale Dougherty, founder of Make Magazine and the Worldwide Make Affairs. He'll be speaking on After 20 Years, the Maker Movement is Still Fun. The website is tcf-nj.org for listing of scheduled talks and events. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, March the 7th. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi, and the website is acgnj.org. The King's Byte Computer Club meets Tuesday, March the 11th. Meeting time 7 p.m., and they will meet at the Park Plaza Restaurant at 7 p.m., 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, the phone number is 347-278-7320. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, March the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, March the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is limac.org. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, March the 27th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is bcug.com. TED Ed Connect meets the first Tuesday of each month, and the next meeting is on Tuesday, April the 1st. Meeting time is 7 p.m. It's a hybrid meeting. They will meet at the Scarsdale Public Library, located at 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, New York, and they will be online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.